All right, we'll call to order the Stevensville Town Council meeting for Thursday, January 10th, 2019. Happy New Year, everybody. If the clerk would please read the roll call.
Mayor Dooley?
Here.
Councilmember Marcher?
Here.
Councilmember Holcomb?
Here.
Councilmember Phillips?
Here.
And Councilmember Mites?
Here.
Great, thank you. If you'd please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we have the approval of the Town Council meeting minutes from November 29th, December 6th, and December 10th of 2018. Ms. Holcomb.
I move the approval of the Town Council meeting minutes for November 29th, 2018, December 6th, 2018, and December 10th of 2018.
Is there a second? Mr. Michelson.
I second that.
Okay, it's been moved by Ms. Holcomb and seconded by Mr. Michelson to approve the Town Council meeting minutes for November 29th, 2018, December 6th, 2018, and December 10th, 2018. Discussion from Council. Okay, public comment. Hearing none, we'll call for the vote. Mr. Phillips?
Aye.
Ms. Barker?
Aye.
Ms. Holcomb?
Aye.
And Mr. Michelson?
Aye.
Thank you. Next up is approval of the biweekly claims. Ms. Holcomb?
I move that we approve of the biweekly claims.
Is there a second? Ms. Barker?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Ms. Holcomb and seconded by Ms. Barker to approve the biweekly claims. Council comments? Ms. Holcomb?
The very top one on the very first page, Ravalli County Finance Paging Equipment for $1,000.
That is several years ago. If this is payment 7, then it'd be about 7 years ago. The fire department and EMS paging system was upgraded, and we signed a contract at that time with Ravalli County to pay back the expense of that system. So this is our share countywide. It's an annual occurrence.
Thank you.
Ms. Barker.
Claim number 14893. Email mitigations. Why were they broken up like the way that they were? Because it came to like 2,000 and something.
Based on the usage. So depending on the department that used it or the fund that used that specific email account or that system, we divided it by that percentage. Ms. Barker?
The IACP membership renewal of 170, who are they?
That's the Chief of Police Association.
And
Ms. Barker?
Let's see that. I have to look back my notes here. The claim number 14893, staff and command lodging.
It's the fire department. Went to a training convention in Great Falls.
Okay.
Anything else? Ms. Holcomb.
So to go back to this email, is this stuff, are we going to see these kind of totals all the time?
Like every month? No. It's okay. An annual. Actually, this is actually a 3-year contract. We were able to reduce the overall bill significantly. So you won't see actually these numbers come up again for 3 years.
Okay.
So, and because we had a number of contracts on our, we had an annual contract on our current email and we had an annual contract on our current website. Those were both prorated back to when we migrated, so that we had a credit on our account.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. All right, if there's no other questions from council, is there any public comment? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Mr. Michelson?
Aye.
Ms. Holcomb?
Aye.
Ms. Barker?
Aye.
And Mr. Phillips?
Aye.
Great. One spot to sign. Start over here. Administrative reports. Ms. Van Tassel.
receivable for utility billing. That is due in large part, well, partly because summer's over, but because we've got the cash receiving system up and running now, it's freeing up Denise to work those receivables, make contacts with customers. She's sent out shut-off notices, and I don't think we had to shut anybody off, did we? Everybody paid. So having that system in place is freeing up her time to really work those receivables. So I anticipate seeing that number drop consistently. I don't ever expect it to be zero, which would be nice, but I do expect it to start drop or continue to drop. The auditors will be in here the week of February 18th. I have submitted all of the information that they have requested. They will begin their actual audit work in their offices probably for the end of this month, so they will have a bulk of it done before they even get here. They only come in-house so they can actually look at documents, the hard copies of things, but I have sent them, I think I ended up sending them 6 zip files of all the information that they requested, so they will get started before they even get here. The one big change that you'll see from the finance department this year, starting next meeting, is that because we now have a week between when the packet goes out and when the meeting happens, you will no longer see finance reports in the packet because so much comes in as far as bills in that space. I will be cutting off the claims entry at noon the day before, and you'll have your finance information by 5 o'clock that evening. I don't want to give incomplete information. I don't want to risk having a bill come due between meetings, so I'm going to give it as much time as I possibly can to collect those invoices and get them entered, and then you'll have your financial information the night before the meeting. That way we're not giving you pieces and parts and possibly missing something.
Yeah. Any questions for April? Ms. Holcomb.
I know at the when you did your last report, we were talking about looking at different CD rates. Did we look into those before those rolled over?
I didn't get a chance to, but we will be because another batch is coming due, and we're also looking at moving. We have one CD, the airport CD is still at Farmers, and I'm looking at the possibility of just consolidating everything, especially now with First Security coming into town. They may have some favorable introductory rates, so that's on my radar for the next week or so.
All right, thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Anything further for April? Great, thank you. Police, Chief Marble.
That's okay. For a second, I thought it was mine. So we had Coffee with Cop December 27th. It was pretty well attended as far as so a few new faces. We did have a pretty good pool of folks that interacted with the Facebook feed. 476 people. That's a pretty good group of people to reach out to. We are accepting applications for the Stevensville Crime Watch program, and I mean, so far we've gotten 2. I think as we get more and more information out there, I think there will be more and more people interested in it. So I think we're finally getting some traction. Pretty excited about this. I think it's going to be a really good thing. I don't have the. I was going to do a PowerPoint, but it's a pretty heavy agenda tonight. If anybody wants to watch, I think the Facebook video of the meeting is still out there, right? Okay. So if anybody wants to go onto the page and look, and you can watch the video in entirety, it's pretty well discussed in that meeting, and the PowerPoint presentation is available. We will also put the PowerPoint presentation, at least in slide format. I don't know if we can do the actual presentation format on our website. We'll look into that, but at least it'll be there in slides so everybody can take a look at it. At some point, I'd like to do more of a comprehensive discussion and, you know, just kind of lay out the whole program. But again, for sake of time tonight, I think it's a good idea not to, particularly tonight. So, especially once we get traction going and start getting some things done with the program, get some of the bugs worked out of it, because there's going to be, inevitably, with a brand new program, especially one that we are tailoring ourselves. I mean, it's based on the national model, but it's going to be our own. So we're going to have some bumps in the road, I'm sure, getting the thing up and running. But really looking forward to it. So if anybody has any questions about it, please let me know. The members of the public as well, if you have questions about it, or if you're interested and you live within the city limits. Also, if you're outside the city limits and you're still interested in doing some neighborhood watch activities, especially in the park areas, you know, Stevensville River Park, things like that, definitely welcome some dialogue with regards to that and maybe take a look at our application. So, yeah.
Are you going to break them down by districts or anything? Or?
We've got zones, yeah, and we'll post the zone map also when we put this information out that we provided during the discussion that we previously had. So you'll be able to see how it breaks out. There may be more than one person can take on in certain zones because they're geographically kind of big.
Well, so we may have one. Let's say I live where I live, and you're just going to walk over. Let's say I wanted to be part of it.
Okay.
But then you, how would that?
I'm not going to be a Stevensville Crime Watch captain. I got other.
You got a regular job.
He is, not him.
All right, then. Yeah. I see what you're doing. All right, thank you.
Any other questions for the chief? In the public? Great, thank you.
Thanks.
Public Works, George?
So you see we produced 13 million gallons of water last month, with 14 million metered, so 1,000 and 5,000 meters loss is 8,000. We're doing a lot of checking on our system, looking for these leaks, and we almost think that one of our major leaks may be our reservoir. We haven't had a good chance to check it yet. We did our reports to state and to EPA. Water meters can continue to be repaired because the batteries are dying and the interpreters, due to their age, you know, I would have thought they would last a month, but I understand that with other meter companies that we've talked to, it's the same thing with them. You know, you always have a certain life on the battery. Went around town, and before we got to really cold weather, we cleaned out our valve boxes so we could get all the valves and shut them off. They get a lot of silting over the summer just from the roads, you know. Had water inspections on a few houses up in the new subdivision up Sourdough. Did some main locating for East Side Highway where they were boring. We've been very lucky that they haven't bored through any of our stuff. Helen Street at the sewer plant was $6 million, and last month that was not $65 million, it's only $6,800,000. Just a typo on that one. And reports there to the state EPA. Blower number two is installed and running and has been running very well. We haven't had any problems with that. And we're same with the markouts on East Side Highway and the inspections. Snowmont Electric, we had to call him. We had a power surge at the sewer plant and blew some fuses. A couple of those fuses, if Steve from Snowy Mountain didn't know about equipment, we would have never thought. We would have had to call Huber to come in, or not Huber, Trevchen to come in and look for him, but he happened to know about equipment, and these fuses were in behind equipment. They were just little tiny glass fuses. And then we had two solenoids that went out on our influence screen, which we got those fixed this last week after ordering parts. Sewer backup at the living center, we got that taken care of. That was on Sunday, I believe, Sunday morning, a week or so ago. Status on well 4 that had quit on us due to the sand is going to be reinstalled either Friday, Saturday, or early next week. It's been ordered and it should be here. We'll have that one up and running. Yes, sir.
Is that the one where it's $2,192?
$2,100? For a well pump?
Yeah.
I think that's our power bill.
Well, that's our power bill.
Yeah. No, the claim for the well pump has not yet been received.
Yeah. Okay.
That'll be closer to the $20,000 range.
Okay.
And they did start on the cameras in the park, but they haven't come back. So, and we've got a bunch of their equipment at the sewer plant because the line of sight from the park is, you can't have a line of sight to here for the part of the equipment. So some of the equipment is going to be at the sewer plant because the line of sight is perfect for sewer plant. So, and from what I understand, here you could get on the computer system and talk to that computer system and see what you want to see.
The last update we received from them was that they'd be here yesterday or today. They haven't come today, so we'll follow up with them tomorrow and find out when the next time they're coming is. So, right?
Anything else?
Thanks, George. All right, move on to guests. We have Tim Peterson with the Bitterroot Task Force on Homelessness and Housing. Peterson.
Good evening. One for me and one for everybody else to share. This is very well attended. Thank you for giving me the time, Mr. Mayor and council members. My name is Tim Peterson. I live in Corvallis. 2 years ago, in November 2016, I became a coordinator for the Bitterroot Task Force on Homelessness and Housing. And in a nutshell, our mission is to prevent homelessness and alleviate housing insecurity throughout the county for all people, all ages, all conditions, from permanent housing, emergency housing, and everything kind of in between. We're trying to facilitate the creation of. We started out, this is very handy, we started out, there's some people identified that there was a problem in Ravalli County, Head Start, Safe, and other people were increasingly finding 25 or 30% of the people that they were serving because they were experiencing homelessness. People were coming to them increasingly with those problems. So we set about kind of defining the problem, and in March of 2018, we published the Homelessness and Housing Needs Assessment that had some key findings, some recommendations, and then from that we kind of came up with some long-term goals and some short-term goals in order to meet that. And not surprising to anybody here, we found that it was a high cost of living here, and we have low wages, which causes a lot of people to be housing insecure. So within a couple weeks of losing their housing from a paycheck or, you know, the problem with their car. And I can go straight, kind of, since we have this here, right? On the back, but there's about 50% of the residents in Ravalli County spend 50% of their household income on housing. The fastest growing occupations for over the last 5 years has been retail jobs. They've grown, increased 49%, and those pay, minimum wage, not really a living wage here. We're finding increasingly, particularly since we got back together this year, employers reaching out saying we can't keep qualified employees, we can't attract qualified employees because housing is too expensive, and you know, we don't pay, the wages just aren't enough. So that's making it difficult. You can see on the bar charts, you can see Ravalli County median home value is $257,000, and in the state of Montana it's $231,000, and in the United States it's $217,000. And this comes from census data. It's a five-year average. We earn in Ravalli County about 74% of what median earns household income in the United States, and about 84% of what they make in Montana. So it's difficult for people to make a living. The Human Resource Council has approached the Montana Board of Housing on five different occasions to get tax credit, federal tax credit funding. They fund about five projects a year, and about 19 people apply. And they have not been successful those last 5 years. 90% sure they're going ahead again this year to try and get that funding. They have property donated to them by the Montana Board of Housing, or the Missoula Housing Authority. They've got a grant for $575,000. And they're changing their plan. So they have there's a site behind Ace Hardware just off of Main Street, 3 acres, I think Jim said. They want to put four plexes on there. Originally, the plan was it was just for the elderly, but they to be more attractive, and they found that their grant will allow them to also make that available to people with disabilities and victims of domestic violence, and now they're also making them two stories since they were originally just one story because they wanted a universal design so you could age in place and you know could get in with your mobility problems. So so that's one of the things that we're trying to encourage is people to get behind that, and seek more information about it, and support it. We think it's a great plan to bring some housing into the county. Some other information is you know, we're way behind the rest of the country on multifamily complexes of five units in a structure or more. We're I think a quarter of the what's in the United States and about half of what's in Montana. And being River Valley County is the seventh most populated county in Montana, we think that we ought to be able to do better. Our vision of what our vision for housing in the community and stuff is on here, and I won't go through it all in great detail. You can look at it, but we want the community to be informed, to know what the situation is. That the 50% of the people that are homeless in River Valley County are children. That you know the. Maybe a dozen people that are street homeless at kind of any one time living in their cars and stuff like that. Probably a lot lower than that, but it gets up to that high. But what we see is people that are living with their families, their friends, they're sleeping on their couch. We see a lot of people in RVs, you know, living there full time, which is and isn't, depending on their circumstances. If it's your choice to live that way, then maybe you're not homeless, but if you're forced, that's the only thing that's available to you, then that's considered homeless. You know, couch surfing is homeless, but most people don't think, they just think, this is my family supporting me, I'm not homeless, I'm just right being supported by them while I get through a struggle. We want citizens that are involved, we want services that are connected, and we want everybody to be proactive in finding solutions, and everybody treated with dignity. And that there's adequate stock to meet all the needs. What we're asking is there's three bills that are in committee at the state of Montana level. There's House Bill 16, which is a bill that was an act providing funding for low-income and moderate-income housing loans with money from the permanent coal severance tax. Senate Bill 15 is an act providing funding for infrastructure costs for affordable housing projects, because that's a huge barrier, I think, in most areas, but particularly here, with limited infrastructure. And then the cost, trying to incentivize people to invest in affordable housing, if you can reduce the infrastructure costs, it makes it easier to build. And then Senate Bill 18 is an act providing for workforce housing tax credits. So this would be what I understand it is there's federal tax credits, but there's far too few. But the idea is that the state would match that to increase more credits. So the money you put in, you deduct from your taxes. So we're asking people to support that. By contacting local elected officials. We think it would be useful for some sort of, at the county level or city level, sort of housing councils or housing boards. And of course, support the Human Resource Council's project here in Stevensville. And then if anybody knows anybody that has any property that might, you know, a legacy donation or something where we can find some property that can maybe work as a shelter, a warming shelter, or, you know, for affordable housing, we sure would love to learn about that. And that's
what I've got. Any questions for Tim?
Tim, we have February 1st. Do you want to tell him about that?
Oh, sure, sure. So part of the identifying the problem is nationwide on the night of January 31st, HUD asks communities that are getting money from HUD or would like to receive money to do a survey of sheltered and unsheltered homeless people. And so what the question is on February 1st, you say, where did you sleep on the night of January 31st? If they were sheltered homeless or they're unsheltered homeless, they ask some demographic questions about the conditions that cause them to become homeless, how many times they've experienced homelessness in the last 3 years, and you know, what kind of supports are you relying on. So it helps educate us, and it helps us receive funding. And we will be, I might end up being down in Darby. We'll be at the senior center from 10 to 2. We're going to have some warm clothes from the River Valley Electric Co-op's warming tree. We'll have food there. We got the donation of haircuts from the Bitterick School of Cosmetology, and a little bit of cash to help pay for cost of gas and stuff to get there. So, thank you for that. Yeah, we've had a great turnout from Stevensville recently. Amber Lamb from the A to Z is joined our task force. Janelle's been very active, and Lorraine from the Main Street Association, there's a lot of interest because people kind of run into Stevensville when they come down, Super One and the Main Street Association, and so they're affected by it. So, yeah.
Great. Any other questions?
Is this part of public comment time or
for him? Just questions for Tim.
Yes. Yep. Okay. How many people do you want us to accept in the city of Stevensville?
I'm not asking you to accept any. I'd like you to accept everybody in Stevensville. I'm not even trying to encourage anybody. What we're trying to, so our mission is to prevent people from becoming homeless and alleviate housing insecurity. So we're trying to, there's so few resources here that, you know, there's a 3-year waiting list to get into subsidized housing. So if you're in housing or subsidized housing, you lose your housing, you're put behind the poverty curve. It's I've heard estimates recently that to serve a homeless person for a year costs $15,000. We want to avoid that because that's not efficient use of money. If you can, Salvation Army spends $3,500 a month rental assistance, and the Human Resource Council and the churches and a lot of other groups spend money to help people stay housed. So that's our focus. We're not trying to bring in a homeless shelter or anything like that. I mean, that would be the city and the community to identify a need to do that. And in my opinion, that doesn't exist here. So. I have no plans to do anything like that.
With the people that you want to put in Stevensville from Stevensville, are you bringing them in to Stevensville from
other
areas?
I'm not bringing
areas?
You. Well, I'm,
would you? I guess I'm asking.
I don't. I wouldn't bring anybody anywhere. People would come here of their own volition. I have no intention of bringing anybody to Stevensville.
Are you speaking in terms of the new housing development that they're proposing? And who will live in that development? Is that
Well, I'm concerned that if we produce homes that people from other parts of the state will be brought in and not take care of our people that need it here.
I understand.
Yeah. So affordable housing is really defined as 30% or less of your income. And I don't know what the cost is going to be for the housing. I would refer you to Jim Martin, the director for the Human Resource Council, on exactly what that is. But there would be the same application process, and like anybody else would go through, you'd have to qualify, you know, to be able to pay for the place like you would anywhere else. It's not free housing, or if that answers your question.
Okay.
Yeah. Penny, did you have a question?
Yeah, I have a couple of them. Number one is, since how not everybody got a piece of your information, uh-huh, your statistics or stuff, is there a place on the web where we can go to get them?
I could. So our needs assessment is on the web.
Where? I've tried to find you guys earlier and I couldn't find you.
Okay. So the Bitterroot Resource Conservation and Development Area, Bitterroot RCND, mm-hmm, is the fiscal sponsor for the task force. We've received a grant from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, so we're helping this happen. Within there in our programs is the Bitterroot Task Force on Homelessness and Housing, and that's where the needs assessment is. You can have this, and I can share it.
We'll post this on our website, right, and on our Facebook, yeah, page for people's, yeah, information.
Yeah. We're really, so the task force is a collaboration of about 40 organizations, about 50 people that are just trying to say, we understand that there's a problem, and how can our expertise, our individual expertise, be applied to improving quality of life for people and, right, preventing them from becoming homeless.
And you said 3 acres behind Ace. Which Ace?
The one right out here off of Main Street.
No,
it's Ace. Oh, I'm sorry.
It's between Eastside Highway and 2nd Street.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's in the street.
Okay, great. Any other questions? Thanks, Tim. Appreciate being here.
Thank you, yeah.
All right, we'll move on to correspondence. We have, I think, 4 items of correspondence that have been received, each from the folks that received our recent grant. And first is from Pantry Partners Food Bank. Thank you, Town of Stevensville. Pantry Partners Food Bank, a 501c3 organization, continues to be blessed with time, funds, and food donations from so many sources in and outside of our beautiful valley. We are an all-volunteer food bank. All of this has kept our goal obtainable to serve those in need in the North Valley, Stevensville, Florence, and Victor South to Victor Crossing. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts. You're the lifeblood of our food bank. We could not do this if it were not for your support. Found below are some interesting statistics about Pantry Partners. We thought you might like to know just how your contributions have worked for us and our community in the year 2018. Pantry Partners receives 205,963 pounds of donated and purchased food from the Montana Food Bank Network, churches, schools, businesses, grocers, organizations, personal gardens, and individuals. Approximately 72% of our food was donated directly to the pantry. The other 28% was purchased with donated monies and grants. 194,809 pounds were given to families in need. In the year 2018, Pantry Partners prepared about 3,096 food boxes, averaging about 238 families per month, plus about 92 families per month who came in for bread, milk, and produce, our porch items. In our area, we served 254 families at Christmas. Pantry Partners had at least 40 volunteers who worked an average of 523 hours during each month serving our community. We absolutely could not have accomplished this without your loving concern. Again, thank you, thank you, thank you. Sincerely, the Pantry Partners Board of Directors. The contribution there was $400. Next item is from the Historic St. Mary's Mission. Dear Mayor Dewey and Town Council, thank you for the $400 check in support of the water and sewer bills for 2019. the Grants to Others program is a great asset to the nonprofit organizations in the Stevensville community. These organizations certainly add vitality and help with economic growth. 2018 was a good year for Historic St. Mary's Mission, with an increase in visitors. We hosted people from 12 countries and 48 states. Our dedicated volunteers conducted over 300 guided tours. Thank you again for your appreciation of the nonprofit organizations that are making the grant application available. Happy New Year, Colleen Meyer, Executive Director. The next piece of correspondence is from Clothes Closet. I'll do my best, it's handwritten. Dear Mayor and City Council, Stevensville Clothes Closet thanks you so much for the grant of $400. That is a great help for this nonprofit, whose total income is from donations. Sincerely yours, Ellen Jones, for all the staff and clients. Next is Stevensville Playhouse, dear town of Stevensville. On behalf of the Board of Trustees of the Stevensville Playhouse Incorporated, thank you for generously supporting our local theater. Please use this document as a tax receipt for your recent gift received 12/28/2018, listed below. A portion of or the entire gift may be tax deductible. Stevensville Playhouse is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, tax ID number listed. No goods or services were received for this donation. Sincerely, Susan McCauley, Board President, grant amount $400. Okay, that concludes correspondence. We'll open it up for public comment. It's an opportunity to comment on anything on tonight's agenda or under the jurisdiction of the town of Stevensville. If you'd like to comment on something on tonight's agenda, you also have an opportunity when the council undertakes a decision for that item. If you're making comment tonight, please make sure you sign the sign-in sheet at the door. Step forward to the podium, state your name and address for the record. Any public comment? Ms. Mickens.
Carolyn Mickens, 211 Buck. It's again talking about Resolution 436. When I wrote out the petition, it stated to vacate the alleyway, which is in the 200 block of Buck, right across the street. I didn't have the knowledge that I was supposed to vacate the alley with an easement, a utilities easement. So when it came to the October 22nd meeting, they had a public hearing, and I was late due to family emergency, so I came at 6:30. I was never given a hard copy of the resolution so that I would know the steps 1, 2, 3, 4. There weren't any hard copies back there. So when it came time to vote, the resolution says that they are voting on, the council members are voting on vacating the alley. That's it. And so when the board members, the council members voted, they may have been most likely under the understanding that they were voting about vacating the alley. And Mr. West, the lawyer, had said, when you vote, make sure that you vote and that there are utility easements, because that's important. So I felt that they misunderstood what they were voting on. I also thought that I had done the petition wrong, so I rewrote a petition, and it stated to vacate the alley leaving utilities easements. And out of the 15 lots, I have 100% signatures, and Mr. Curtis and I came and visited with the mayor about getting it back on to the agenda, and again, I was turned down because the council had already voted on it, and it would be wasting their time, obviously, if you re-vote something that you've already voted on. So, I was also told to bring it to my board members, which are Mrs. Holcomb and Mrs. Barker, and I did that. And they stated that they thought it would be well worth my time to have them put it on the agenda. So we worked together, we wrote it out to decide to re-vote this issue. And both Mrs. Holcomb and Mrs. Barker signed off on this request to have it done. I was under the understanding, I'm not saying assuming, I was under the understanding that if two council members sign off on a request for something to be put on the agenda that the mayor would put it through. And guess what? I'm greatly disappointed in you, Mr. Dewey, because you denied my request. And I would like at this time, one, what can I do to get this back on the agenda so we can get it settled? And two, why was their request denied?
Public comment period is not an opportunity for dialogue. I'm sorry. I'm happy to discuss it with you after the meeting.
All right. Well, I'll make an appointment so that we can do that, because great. I imagine it'll be a long night.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Any further public comment? Okay. Hearing none, we'll move on to unfinished business. Standing agenda item, discussion decision regarding the response and recommendation report regarding a complaint filed by Town Clerk Audrey Tribency. This is more or less just a status update as we continue to kind of wade ourselves through this. There's a table with recommended actions and a status of those in your council packet and on the screen. We continue to make progress in addressing the recommendations that both the investigator and myself brought forward to council, and some of those are on the agenda tonight. If there's no questions or anything, we'll move on. Okay. Next item is discussion decision regarding an interlocal agreement between the Town of Stevensville Fire Department and Stevensville Rural Fire District. Just to provide you with an update as to where we are, the interlocal agreement that you have in your packet tonight has gone to the district board. They've gone through it and provided us back with some recommendations and some changes that they'd like to see. The fire chief and I haven't taken an opportunity to sit down and thoroughly go through those changes, and that those changes aren't included in your packet tonight since we receive them after the packet deadline. So we'll reconsider this item at a later date once the chief and I have a chance to go through those and bring some sort of recommendation back to the council. Anything else on that? Okay. Moving right on into new business then. Discussion on resolution number 444, a resolution of the Town of Stevensville Town Council establishing a code of conduct for elected and appointed officials. Mr. Phillips, do you want to take it away and kind of tell where we are on the code of conduct?
Good evening. Last council meeting, we discussed the possibility of creating a code of conduct for elected and appointed officials in the town of Stevensville. It was suggested that by Robin Holcomb that I meet with Mayor Dewey and discuss the possibility of creating this code of conduct. And on the Wednesday regular meeting, Mayor Dewey, our attorney Brian West, and Councilmember Michelson meet on a Wednesday, and they invited me to that meeting, and we discuss the possibility of creating this code of conduct. And during that meeting, the recommendation was that I go ahead and start creating this document, and so I did proceed, and within a week I had a document ready, and I sent that to each member of the town council and the secretaries and Brian West. Mayor Dewey recommended that we have a committee meeting to discuss the possibility of adding more and refining the draft that I had presented. And we had a meeting here just to discuss what was to go into this code of conduct, and we came up with several additions to that. And Then, after we had those additions made to this draft, we sent it on to our attorney, Brian West, for have him look at it, and he sent it back with some changes. At this point, we need to decide what we want to do with this. Either have a council of the whole meeting, or whatever we want to do with it. We do have, you know, a document that has been drafted, you know, two different drafts on it, and we need input from the council, basically. So at this time, you know, I think we need to have a discussion on exactly what we need to do. One item in the updated draft we had, Mr. West suggested that there are some legal things as to sanctions if we have problems on the council or any elected official. There's sanctions listed in there, and there is some confusion at that. Now, Councilmember Michelson and Barker have submitted an agenda item to create a committee of ethics, which would be able to take care of any problems we had in the council, any sanctions. The committee of ethics would be able to do that, and so that would be have to be incorporated in there. So that's basically in a nutshell. We have a second draft ready for the council to look at. We need to go to a committee of the whole meeting. Now we need to decide what to do.
Mr. Michelson.
I'd like to make a motion that we put this onto a committee of whole meeting. So we're not
just a discussion. Ms. Holcomb.
When we talked about this, our attorney recommended that that we designated a council member to be a liaison with the mayor to review samples and recommend that we and policies to the committee of the whole. I agreed to that and suggested that we ask council member Phillips. Never once did I ask say in here that you should make a committee and go over these in a closed meeting. This should have came to us at a committee of the whole, not a closed meeting between a council person, the mayor, a clerk, our treasurer. Was this meeting made public? Was the public told about this meeting that they could come and put input in on this?
So the direction was that Mr. Phillips would liaison between myself and the council.
Right.
I felt from the mayor's office perspective that it was helpful to have a group of people who work within this organization go through the draft and see what their recommendations were. That's where the human resources director came into. That's where the clerk came into it because she's been the subject of some of the conduct. And so she had some insight as to her experiences. And with April's human resource background, I felt that that was helpful input into the code of conduct. I also invited one of our police commissioners, Sue Devlin, who has an extensive background in personnel management, but also hears issues of conduct at times with the police commission. So these were all in-house people. This was not a committee that was appointed by the public body, and it wasn't subject to public notice or anything like that. It'd be no different than if I threw the code of conduct in front of the entire staff and said, what do you think?
Well, but the recommendation was that you would work together with Councilmember Phillips, come up with some ideas, and then we do come to a council of the whole, not to start this whole meeting and come up. I mean, honestly, some of these limited contact with your town staff, I mean, it sounds like you're trying to cripple your council I mean, we can have limited time, and I really think we need to relook at this resolution with our attorney, because you're telling us we can't have limited contact with the town staff, we can't have contact with our attorney, we have to get your permission for this. I just think there's a lot of stuff that needs to be fixed in this.
So I think the intent of tonight's discussion was, the draft you have in front of you tonight is the draft that Brian West reviewed, but his feedback is not incorporated into that draft yet. So I think the intent of tonight's discussion was that if the council had feedback to provide, then we reconvene and pull in your feedback with Mr. West's feedback into one clean draft for you to consider. Mr. Phillips.
After, you know, all this has transpired, you know, just this last week when I received a copy of the minutes and read what was said during those minutes, and it said a recommendation to bring this up at a, you know, committee of the whole meeting, then I sent out an email, you know, requesting that we do such, you know, because, you know, I was, you know, under the assumption that we could go ahead and proceed, you know. But as I read the minutes, you know, it says definitely, you know, recommendation to bring it up at a committee of the whole meeting. And so that's my recommendation right now.
And I would have to agree. Ms. Barker?
I did my own little research on finding out what different communities out there had for their code of ethics and their code of conduct. And every time I typed it in, it took me right to the Montana page for government. And so I guess I don't understand why we're trying to recreate something that we already have to abide by law.
I've done the same thing, and I've gone to the MCA code of ethics, and there is a code of conduct in there. And it is mainly for if an official is doing something wrong, or like taking bribes or taking monetary things from public. There's nothing in that code of conduct that relates to our decorum and our actions, you know, how we conduct ourselves in the public eye and in meetings. There's nothing in that code of conduct as part of the code of ethics. So that's why I feel we need to address a code of conduct that deals with our actions and our decorum in the meetings and with the public.
Ms. Holcomb.
And I've also started looking into stuff, especially when I got to this limited contact with town staff, and I don't see any that says that you should have limited contact with your town staff. I mean, we should be able to work together as a team, and you're not letting us work. This is not letting us work together as a team, and that's what I feel like.
So you keep referring to that like it's something I did.
Well,
and I want to make it very clear that I'm not putting any directives into this document. That was something the group agreed to place in there.
So I think we need to do, I am in agreement that we need to do a COW meeting.
Okay. We can schedule one. Absolutely. I'll confer with the clerk and figure out what kind of date looks best, and get with Mr. Phillips to have that scheduled. Okay. Anything further on the code of conduct? Okay, we'll move on. Next item is discussion decision to establish a 3-member ethic panel to review complaints of alleged violations of public trust, public duty, as authorized by Montana Code Section 2-2-144, subsection 5. Michelson and Barker. Mr. Michelson.
I gave you this at our last month's private meeting, and actually this came through your recommendation. Your recommendation was to form an ethics committee.
No, I don't. I did not have a recommendation to form an ethics committee.
Well, yeah, it was, but it doesn't matter. So I gave it to you, and The only hard part I have getting finding is finding citizens to be on the ethics committee. We don't seem to get enough volunteers. I've asked 4 people and I've only got 1 maybe. So, these are just people that are the citizens of the town.
Sure, okay.
So, and I'm all for it, but getting people on board to be part of a committee, as you well know, Mayor Dewey, finding volunteers for boards or any committees is real hard in a small town.
Absolutely. So, we have a hard time staffing the boards we have.
Right. And so if we're going to create new ones, that's, to me, it's going to be one of the biggest obstacles.
Yeah.
It's going to be the biggest obstacle assigning people to man these positions, whether it's a conduct or a code of conduct or ethics.
So this specific ethics committee, as I understand it, or ethics panel, the scope of issues that they consider is very narrow. It's very specific in state law as to what this panel will and won't consider. And so I don't know if this panel is even authorized by code to consider things that we would have in our own adopted code of conduct. I think the default is if there's an issue with ethics as they're explained in Montana code, then the default of that is typically to the county attorney's office. Mr. West.
Mayor, do you have a question? If you create this panel, the only complaints this panel may take up are what are contained within 2-2-101 and the rest of the statutes. Because if you look in the language, the first sentence, a local government may establish a 3-member panel to review complaints of violations of this part. So the only complaints this panel could take up would be the ones under Title II, Chapter 2. That's going to be your code of ethics set out by the MCA. And at that point, it would refer to the county attorney for further review. So it would not take up, if the council ultimately creates its own internal code of conduct, any violations of that.
So basically should go by the wayside if it really covers that.
Sure. Yeah. No, I don't think it's something that's absolutely necessary. Obviously, that's the decision of you folks. You know, if it's something you decide to move forward on, then what we need to do is pull an ordinance together that talks about who can serve on the committee, what their terms are like, who appoints them, that sort of information. You know, the frequency of their meetings, much like we did with our airport board and our TIF-TED board. That should all be codified somehow in ordinance so that going forward we know how that group operates. But again, this panel will deal only with what's covered in Montana mm-hmm. code, that section that Mr. West cited. And that primarily, Brian, that deals with like bribery and misuse of public funds and that sort of thing, correct? Less of behavioral type of deals.
Well, it covers public trust, public duty, and rules of conduct. Those are all contained under Title II, Section 2. But actually, I believe what Councilperson Bark was referring to when she was looking at the NCA.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. With the consensus of the rest of the council? Yeah. All right. Very good. Move on to item C. Discussion decision to approve an engagement letter between Town of Stevensville and Ross Miller, water rights attorney. I was hoping Craig was here from HDR to kind of help loop us in on the water rights. Are you comfortable
absolutely.
Giving it a stab and I'll help fill in the blanks?
Yeah, I'll just...
Absolutely.
Yeah. Even by way of introduction, my name is Ross Miller. I'm a water rights attorney based out of Missoula. As a little bit of background, I previously functioned as Stevensville's water law attorney back in from the period of about 2007 through 2010, when the first well for the well number one, I should say, for the Twin Creek subdivision was being drilled and permitted, and we did eventually get that permitted in 2010. Later in 2010, I went in-house as in-house counsel, the in-house lawyer for Mountain Water Company in Missoula, and served as their in-house lawyer and thus closed my private practice through the summer of 2017. So for the last year and a half, I've been back into private practice as a water lawyer. Probably about 80% of my clientele and workload is for municipal water suppliers. So with that as background, I'll kind of go through where Stevens, just a couple minutes on background of where Stevensville is at right now on water rights. In 2014, Stevensville submitted a change application to DNRC basically permit all of the four new wells that are up by the Twin Creek subdivision, where those four new wells would then provide the bulk of the water supply to the town of Stevensville. And that change application would also then expand the place of use, expand the geographic boundary of where those water rights could be used. As part of that change application, it was going to take a number of Stevensville's existing water rights and change them to the new use of these new four wells. That change application was a fairly long drawn out process. In 2015, DNRC ultimately denied and terminated that change application. So as of right now, those wells, with the exception of the first well, well number one, in the new well field, the other three wells in the new well field are currently operating unpermitted. And there's a couple other issues, basically place of use issues, where the new wells are located outside the current place of use for the town of Stevensville, so the geographic boundary of the place of use needs to be changed. So that's basically the current situation with the town of Stevensville, and is the main issue that I've been asked to look into tackling, if you will. There's been, it's interesting, since 2015 when DNRC denied that change application, there's been a couple of quite major changes in municipal water law in Montana. The biggest change came about in 2017. There was a case, the city of Helena versus another water user, came all the way up to the Montana Supreme Court. And the Montana, that's basically what we call the Helena decision, the 2017 Helena decision. And the Montana Supreme Court ruled for the first time ever in Montana that Montana did indeed recognize a growing communities doctrine. Now that is actually a very major step forward in Montana water law for municipalities. What a growing communities doctrine is, it's a recognition that water rights for municipalities have include the right for reasonable growth. And that's a very large thing that was never recognized concretely in Montana law before. DNRC has never recognized that as part of Montana law. And so now that we've had that state Supreme Court ruling, it's going to be very worthwhile to go take another look at Stevensville's historical water rights and how they might be looked at by DNRC. So that's a key change that's happened since then. We've got the other thing is we've got the benefit of looking at the denied application from 2015 and learning what we can from that, what were the reasons for the termination, what were the deficiencies in that, are any of those deficiencies, do we think, taken care of by this more recent 2017 Helena decision? Any deficiencies that look like they may not be taken care of by that decision, how can we take care of them? Things like that. So we can, those failures aren't always, a lot of times those failures are necessary steps that have to be taken, and we can learn from those failures and then move forward. I think that's where we're at with that 2015 deny an application. So the basic, at this point, what I'm recommending is that we kind of kick this off by having some preliminary meetings and discussions with DNRC about what a new change application, water rights change application, would look like. The good news is Stevensville is sitting on a lot of historical water rights. The problem is Stevensville's now using those water rights in a different manner than they were historically used, and so we need to go through this statutory change process with DNRC to kind of clean those water rights up and get that new well field permitted using existing water rights that Stevensville already has. So I think that's going to take maybe a few meetings with DNRC to see if we can get on the same page with an application and see where we stand. And from those meetings and work that the town's engineer, HDR, is doing, come up with an outline of what a new application would look like that we think we'll have a good chance of sailing through. So that we're just actually at the kickoff stage of that. I've submitted an engagement agreement with the scope of services to the town for your consideration. And if that's the direction you want to go, I'd be more than happy, very appreciative to have the town move forward in that. One other thing is that I became aware of from the town and from HDR is that apparently DNRC has a granting opportunity that might possibly take care of a portion of this. It's the Renewable Resources Planning Grant. I've never done this type of work under a grant, so that would be new territory for me. HDR, the town's engineer, works a lot with those grants, so I'd be working cooperatively with HDR to see if that grant is something that the town would qualify for and do our best effort to try to get that. So that's all I've got tonight.
Thanks, Ross. Okay, Ms. Holcomb.
I move that the approve an engagement letter between the town of Stevensville and Ross Miller, water rights attorney.
Okay, is there a second? Ms. Barker.
Second motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve the engagement agreement between town of Stevensville and Ross Miller, water rights attorney. Council discussion. It's our hope. I can't recall off the top of my head. I'll have to go back and look at my notes. But when I spoke with DNRC about the grant opportunity, it was a considerable amount of money, enough for us to pursue that funding opportunity. And I had held a conversation with the representative from DNRC about a year ago, and Dan Johnson was also there from Rural Development. We talked about our water rights and the challenges we've had in getting these wells permitted. I had her contact information, and she said when they're ready to proceed on something, they may have some funding available. We're kind of outside of their grant cycle, but they have the ability to go into a special cycle so that they can consider just our application. And they seemed optimistic that we'd be eligible for some funding to help offset the cost of this. Outside of that, if we don't receive any grant funding, this is tied in with the water storage project. So, and in order for Rural Development to fund us for the water storage project, they want us to have water rights for the water we're storing. So they all kind of fit together and go hand in hand. So a lot of moving pieces. Further?
So do we have a time frame on this approximately?
Well, that's a good question. We'd move immediately into the preliminary work on the grant application, which would be basically meetings with DNRC. I've already reviewed all the historical work and kind of gotten up to speed on where Stevensville's at with its water rights. So as far as arranging meetings with DNRC, that can happen immediately. And then map out a change application. Once we move into a change application, which could happen quite soon, you know, as soon as we get it scoped out, what we need to do, that would be a little bit of a effort to get that work done, and then it's filed with DNRC. And
it's up to them.
Yeah, well, there are some statutory guidelines on when they have to, they're scheduled for going through that, but basically you're looking at, once you submit an application, you're at a minimum of 3/4 of a year. Okay. They usually go longer than that. For example, the permit we did on the Twin Creeks, that was submitted, I can't remember the date exactly, but it was in 2008, and it took about 2.5 years for that permit to ultimately be granted. And that one went fairly smoothly.
Okay. Maybe a while.
These things take a little while.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any further discussion from council? Public comment? All right. Hearing none, we'll call for the vote. Councilmember Michelson.
Aye.
Councilmember Barker.
Aye.
Councilmember Phillips.
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb.
Aye.
Thank you. Thanks, Ross.
Thank you. I'll certainly stay with
you. No, I don't think. All right. Yeah, you're good to go. Appreciate it. Next item is item D, discussion decision with to consent to the mayor's town employee reorganization plan. We've all been provided with the plan in your packets. Has everybody had a chance to review that? I guess I started off, in kind of scoping this out and figuring out where the changes need to be made. We looked at the problem-solving model, obviously. We identified that there were some issues in how we were structured today, defined kind of what those were, and that's delineated in the plan. And we've talked about a number of options as a staff and vetted some different ideas and really came to this solution as the best thing to kind of implement and see how it works as we monitor. So from there, I think instead of really going into a lot of detail, I think it just answer any questions that the council has, if any. Fire training. Ms. Barker?
I guess after reviewing some of the descriptions, I have concerns on the town clerk, court clerk position. The proposed title was town clerk building official and zoning. I know that there's been comments made in other meetings that the workload has been quite abundant. For one, a building official, that's not in the clerk's job. That's not their job to do that. So I have a problem with that. And then the utility billing clerk and general services clerk, making our general service clerk a deputy clerk. For one, you got to be bonded, from what I understand, and making sure that these steps are actually, done. I mean, I've never seen a certificate on any of those in the office if they are bonded or not, and I think it should be something that the council is aware of. I guess, general service clerk was brought in as a 20-hour part-time position. We put that workload on them, then we're giving them more hours. Where are we getting these funds for? I mean, I looked at your moving of your wages and how we would save, but to me, you're just looks like you're moving one thing to another, and we're not saving, really. So I guess I have some concerns in that aspect. We have it in our municipal code book that our clerk is designated as a clerk. So I don't know where we're trying to change these things when we have laws to follow.
So the clerk currently doesn't function as a sole clerk. She functions as a part-time town clerk and a part-time court clerk. And both of those duties have relatively rigid timelines. Even this week, we've experienced where the court clerk has been committed to the court for the past two and a half days. Yesterday, I saw her for 20 minutes. The rest of the day, she was committed to the court. Today, a good portion of her day was committed to court, and the same with Tuesday. And so what we're trying to do is to say that the town clerk has a very rigid timeline as far as getting tasks completed, because we have deadlines for town council outlined in council rules, and the court also has very rigid deadlines that sometimes conflict with each other. We're hoping that if we take the court clerk off and add building official and zoning, those deadlines in those two departments are much more flexible. They aren't as rigid. And really, we're looking more for supervision of that department and not so much of the actual work done in that department. So that's where the theory is in moving from court and moving her duties off of court and into the building official and zoning aspects. The other piece to court is that the town clerk often works with the mayor's office on compliance issues. And if those compliance issues, for whatever reason, come to the city court, that creates a conflict, because she's sometimes can be a witness or serve in some other capacity for the mayor's office, and then the judge has to kind of finagle the case because her court clerk is somewhat indisposed. She can't necessarily be involved in the case from the court side of things. So that can create a challenge, and the judge and the clerk both have brought that to my attention. I think, in regards to the deputy clerk and the general services clerk, the general services clerk is a full-time position in our organization. Half of that person's time is spent in the fire department for administrative support there. The other half of their time is administrative support for the clerk's office. And that doesn't change. We've added code compliance onto that role in the most recent past. It's more or less just a consistency in title. At one time, the utility billing clerk was the deputy clerk. That was her title. Over the years, I think we've just kind of referred to her as the utility billing clerk. So we're just trying to create some consistency in those titles. The other thing that's attractive is that, hopefully, if we can retain people, then maybe one of those people who serves in a deputy clerk position can eventually serve as a clerk for the town of Stevensville, and we can retain that experience and that investment into the employee to kind of give them some sort of a ladder to climb. The current town clerk is qualified to serve as a building official from a supervisory capacity. She's obviously not certified to do any inspections or that sort of thing, but that's why we have an inspector on board, is to do those things. And she served in that capacity in previous positions in her career. So we're trying to take advantage of the skill set that she brings to the organization, as well as the skill set that the utility billing clerk and general services clerk both bring to the organization, to kind of find their niches and where they best can help out. Ms. Holcomb.
Well, I just have a question, because that building official, wasn't that out for the public to put in an application?
It was.
So will she be putting an application for that position?
We could reopen it and take internal applicants, I suppose, yes. But, or we can reorganize the job descriptions as they're proposed here, so that those duties fit within that position. But we did not, we received two applications, both from out-of-state individuals who sought that position, but sought an exorbitant salary, more than I think anyone in the organization makes today. So we denied it. We said we're not, obviously there's no market out there for a building official in this capacity, as part-time as it is. I can have April come and explain with some more clarity how the numbers jive, if you'd like. April?
Okay, so when you guys discussed this at the last meeting, the mayor and I sat down and we reviewed the budget and we looked at what we where we stood as of that day compared to the budget and what we projected for the rest of the fiscal year. And we did notice some areas where we would anticipate some savings based on the budget. One of the proposals is to remove the court responsibilities from the town clerk, hire a part-time court clerk, but at a significantly reduced wage per hour. So the court would see savings in that regard, because right now we're the court clerk is being paid what the town clerk gets paid. So we would see a savings in the court by paying that reduced wage at only 16 hours a week. We bill. I think the judge feels that 16 hours a week would be sufficient to cover her needs. We would see a slight increase in the admin wages, because right now the utility billing clerk is allocated to water, sewer, and airport. We would reduce the percentage that's allocated to the water and sewer funds and allocate a portion to the general fund, the admin budget, to compensate for those duties that she would kind of pick up a little bit from the clerk. Let's see. The really cool thing about this, if we can pull this off, is that we would free up enough to hire another police officer. We work the numbers and we feel very comfortable that we could, if you guys approve this, we can pull this off. And I know that the chief is here to speak to that. We do anticipate a decrease in the public works, partly due to the fact that the second seasonal employee that we hired ended up getting sick midway through the season, so we didn't have to pay those wages. So we anticipate, we will see a savings there because we didn't pay it. So there are several other, and I know it was in your plan, where we can see some savings. One thing we did get notice from Dennis today that he has retracted his resignation. Tomorrow will not be his last day, due to in part, and if we can go ahead with this plan, that may change back. He may go ahead and retire, but he doesn't feel comfortable leaving right now because we only have an inspector. We wouldn't have anyone to oversee the department if he were to leave. So that piece of it is kind of up in the air right now. But overall, we do anticipate, with this plan put in place, we do anticipate some savings and the added advantage of getting another officer in here this fiscal year rather than having to wait for the next. So I guess with that, I'll move on.
Does anybody mind if the chief speaks?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Chief, thanks, April. Are there any questions for April on the numbers or the dollars before we have her go back and sit down? Okay, great. Chief.
So basically, I mean, obviously we all know that there's a need to get momentum of getting our police force back at least to what it was prior to all the issues. And if we can accomplish this by this restructure, I mean, I think we need to. We're at that point. I mean, we've got so many things going on right now, especially, that are pointing in the direction of building this thing to where we can be more proactive and not just reactive, not just reacting to situations, but, you know, like the Stevensville Crime Watch. I mean, that is going to take some effort before it's never actually going to sail on its own completely. There's going to be interaction that especially I need to have. Getting more officers to work cases, to do other things, is going to free me up more to do those types of planning activities and engage with the public to structure programs that would help us facilitate a proactive department and deal with crimes before, hopefully before they become crimes. So, I mean, this is, it's a means to an end. We've just got to get to that point where we're moving forward, where we're taking steps to make this happen. And if this restructure, and I understand, you know, that there might be some issues to address. Specifically, I don't know how, what the process is to get somebody bonded, but I can't imagine it's too labor intensive to do that. So,
it's $10 a year and it's the insurance company.
Okay. So, you know, if there's little things like that, I mean, I'm sure that those can be addressed, but we're just at that point now. I mean, things are moving forward. I've got kind of a conceptual plan that at some point I'll discuss with all of you more when we get into budget negotiations about how I'd like to progress up until 2021, which is kind of the project plan here for getting the police department staffed the way it needs to be. So if this is that catalyst that gets the thing moving, I think that we should do it.
Can you speak to the pressure or the discussions we've had with the sheriff's office in regards to our staffing?
It is, it's been tense. And I've noticed, and you know, Janelle has too, we've seen a lot of stuff coming back to us that they were initially going to deal with, and then they've got their own stuff going on. And I mean, just the other night, it was, I got a call out on an in-progress call, an assault, and it's not ideal to go to those by yourself. Sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. But literally, in the entire county, there wasn't a single officer available, including Highway Patrol. Everybody had a priority call. That's why they called and said, hey, we have nobody. You need to respond to this. You know, it's not ideal. We're in a position where we need to take care of our folks, and we need to staff the police department to accomplish that goal. So it is tense. You know, it's straining the relationship somewhat, dealing with the issues of the sheriff's office. They have staffing issues too. And we've committed, and the town's spoke and said, you know, we want to keep this thing going, we want to build it, and we want to accomplish some goals here. And I think we're definitely heading in that direction. So if we can get some, like I said, we get momentum going with this, I know some great things can happen with it. I mean, things that I've been wanting to do for years to help get us to be more involved and ingrained in the community, not just through longevity, but just through contacts and, you know, taking care of folks how we need to. You know, over the years, we've all talked about various things and sometimes butted heads on issues, but none of that matters. What really matters is taking care of people here. So I just urge you to really consider this, really look at this. And if this is, again, if this is the thing that gets the ball rolling with this, let's get it done. Let's take care of the people we need to take care of.
Thanks, Chief. Thank you. I think something to kind of consider with this was that, you know, this wasn't April and I getting together and kind of just rearranging things. We definitely heard the input of the staff, you know, through the organization to find out where they felt most comfortable and what duties or projects or things like that that they, you know, felt like they needed more time on or what changes they felt would be advantageous to both their position and the organization. And with that, then once we kind of evaluated where people kind of saw themselves, we looked at their qualifications and what where they were able to fill in and where their skill set would be best used by us and not, you know, pushed onto the wayside and wasted. So you know, that's another piece to consider, but certainly the public safety aspect of this, we're really excited about the idea that we can get ourselves back up to the staffing level we saw with the police department and at least show or demonstrate to both the public and the sheriff's office that we're making small strides and we're doing what we can do within the means we have to live in. And that's something that I explained to you when you first approved me to go forward and consider this, was that we would do so within the budgeting that we had done already. So this isn't something where we're going to come back for a budget amendment this year and say, you know, we need more money. This is something where even after we've reorganized, we still see a savings, $5,000 savings in the general fund after we reorganized and added that police officer in there. So all of that to consider. Mr. Michelson.
On this proposal about the mayor, are you seeking a raise or two?
I am not. What I am seeking is that if the plan is implemented, what that does is that allows me to kind of
free up more time.
It frees up more of my time and less on day to day meddling and supervision and answering questions and that sort of thing, and kind of disperses some of the supervision, especially in the clerk's office. Where everybody in the clerk's office right now, all four of the ladies, they all report to me on a daily basis. That consumes a lot of my time to supervise four people. Where what I'd rather be doing is a much higher 30,000-foot view, if you will, of initiatives and the type of work that the council would really like to see us do on a broader scope versus very specific, where I'm dealing with these little things. And we've all acknowledged this is the intent here is that the mayor's position is part time, and right now, at least as the report explains, 2018 was a 30-hour-a-week year for me. I'm still full time parent at that. So I'd like to free up some of my time to be able to work on the larger scale issues that you all want to work together on. Versus, you know, the management of employees on a more micro level. I like to work macro. Ms. Barker.
I guess I just, going back to the clerk's position, I just don't think that she should be the building official and a zoning. We have people that would be willing, I'm sure if we put it out there again, that's what we were looking for. I truly believe we put a big workload already on the clerk, and I don't think she needs any more added to it. If we're taking her away from the court clerk, I think she needs to concentrate on the job that she's got.
Okay.
As clerk and helping out with the financials or whatever is up front. This is not her job.
So you're suggesting then making the town clerk full-time, so she's at the total, all of her work is town clerk work, no other work? Keeping a building official on board in the building department.
I think the building and zoning need to be something else. It's not her job.
Okay.
Same thing with the general services clerk as a deputy clerk.
But that's just a title, Stacey. That's not.
It is.
She functions as a deputy clerk. No.
She is listed as a general services clerk.
So her title changed.
No, you can't change her title.
Why?
Because that's the way this is the way we drew it up, and this is the way it was, how it states in the job description. She is not a deputy clerk.
I'm asking to change the job description.
No, I think it needs to say it as a general services clerk, because she doesn't need to be in that position.
She functions as a deputy clerk, though. If she's doing the job, why wouldn't we call her that?
Is she bonded? Why is she collecting funds? She's not bonded.
She's bonded.
When did she get bonded?
I was bonded as a general services clerk.
It's news to us.
Where did you get your information? I mean, ask me, I'll tell you she's bonded. Yes, sir.
Who fills in for April when she's gone? Is it part of the clerk's duties?
No, actually, I don't think anybody has any duty to step in when April's gone. We kind of just pinch hit. And if she's gone for any period of time, she puts in processes such as payroll and that sort of thing. Those are scheduled in advance. So we don't have a significant redundancy for that position yet. Denise has some training in that area. not a ton, but she has some. And so currently if something happens that we need, if April's gone for the day and we need something out of the computer, I'm able to pull that up because I functioned in that position for a period.
That's right.
So right now I'm kind of that backup plan, but if for whatever reason I'm not here and she's not here, then we, there's nothing that's so urgent in the finance department that we can't wait a couple of days. So, Chief?
Can I ask a question for clarification purposes? Stacey, is your concern whether or not she's qualified to serve in that capacity?
Correct.
Stated? Can you speak to her qualifications as I understand them? Or is that not an appropriate venue to talk about?
To the proposed deputy clerk qualifications? Are you talking about the individual or the
general services?
So you're seeking.
No, I'm sorry. I'm talking about
Audrey's qualifications.
Yeah, to fill in the role, of, you know, in the building department, and so forth.
Sure, we can shift. And Audrey, would you mind speaking to your qualifications as a building official and zoning administrator?
So before taking the job here in Stevensville, I worked for the city of Sedona. I was a community development director. I was with the city for 25 years. As the community development director, I oversaw public works, engineering, code enforcement, building safety, a host of other things. I was the zoning administrator. I was the building official. I have done those capacities for many, many years. So I have a skill set. I have a lot to offer this community. I'm offering you some skill sets that we don't have and we couldn't get. Literally, they wanted $100,000 for the building official to come in for the two applications. I'm here. I'm happy to do it because I am qualified. I am not a certified building official, but I have been serving as a building official for many years, since 2004. And just to give you a little bit of perspective from my job responsibilities as it currently exists, it's not sustainable. I cannot maintain this. I keep going to Brandon and saying, I can't do this. I contacted Stacy. Said, Stacy Barker, not Barker, sorry.
Bartlett.
How did you do this? How did you manage the court component and the town clerk component? She says, I couldn't. She let the town clerk position a lot of those functions sit aside, and she just simply didn't do them. Her main focus was getting the council packets out and court. I have a little bit more responsibility to make sure I'm doing the town clerk stuff correctly. I'm under a microscope. I want to dedicate the time to do everything correctly. I can't. I truly simply cannot sustain the current workload. It's impossible. I'm already, every week, overtime. This week it'll probably be, I don't know, 10 hours of overtime. I do it every week.
Ms. Holcomb.
So, I want to make sure, because if we change this, and we did not have her fill out an application, I don't want to just be giving her, because this was open to the public.
It was, and it's been closed, and so we're okay to assign those duties to someone else.
Can I get your opinion on that?
Closed, not no offers made to any of the applicants?
No.
No agreements? Yeah, you can reallocate your job positions if it doesn't affect a pre-existing position or compensation.
Okay.
Which fits within the plan. That was...
Well, that's why I wanted to, because I don't want someone to come back on us and say, well... This was out there, now you're just going to hand it to somebody. So the other question I have is, okay, if you're saying that the workload is heavy now,
extremely.
How different is it going to be being the town clerk and the building official zoning? How different will that be for you?
It will be significantly different because you've just taken out every week my court responsibilities, which are significant. This week alone, almost all of Tuesday was court. I haven't been able to respond to emails that I'm getting in the clerk's position, town clerk's position, because Tuesday was court. Wednesday was nonstop court for 10 hours, almost. And then today, until 2:00, I did nothing but the court stuff. And then hurry and get ready for tonight's meeting between 2 and 7 getting ready for this. So if I can have that 16 hours on average that I dedicate to the court removed and then give, because that's time sensitive. I have to get the warrants out. I have to get the attorneys, whatever documents took place, and I have to prepare for the court, you know, whatever documents that we have to do before court and then after the hearings. So that would significantly free up time to do the zoning and building official functions, which take a lot less time-sensitive time. I can put things off a little bit and manage my time much better that way.
Okay.
So when you're saying to bring in a court clerk, which would be part-time,
right?
Correct. When you say you're going to be saving significantly, how significantly are you talking? What would that starting wage be? I mean, that's...
We've calculated it at $13 an hour, so $5 an hour decrease.
So that's something that would have to come in front of us as council again as...
When we separate those positions off, right, when we separate the court clerk duties off of the town clerk, then that court clerk will come forward for a wage adoption so that you understand the wage you're
adopting. And a job description.
Right. Because right now they're combined.
I just don't want to see you taking on more work where you've already got a big workload and then you're taking something out that you're saying is 16, you know, hours. Who's to say this couldn't, you know, they've got 20 homes that they're proposing. There's another piece of property. Bringing in some homes,
right?
So you're—I mean, there's different things I'm looking at as a future. Of, I don't want you to be work overloaded where you're already work overloaded.
I appreciate that very much. I really do appreciate that. This proposal really reduces the stress and the amount of workload because the amount associated with supervising as a building official interpreting building codes is significantly less. Even the zoning administrator, that comes through, takes the conflict out of the mayor and the board of adjustment. That's my areas of expertise. I can read codes left and right, backwards and forward. I know that. I know how to do that. So it won't be like a learning curve, or it won't be time intensive. I'm not preparing documents for court or warrants or whatever it is that I'm preparing. It's more at a higher level with the building official.
So is that taking you out of the... Zoning.
Yes, which would be much appreciated. for two reasons. One, it's something that I have to spend time on that's more, you know, technical, where, I'd rather be up higher. And the other issue is that if I make a determination as a zoning administrator and someone appeals that determination, that comes to the Board of Adjustments. Well, I have a vote on that board.
It's a conflict,
and MLCT, their general counsel, Kelly Lynch, said that that's not a good practice to do that. You really shouldn't, because it's appealing a decision to the same person who made the decision. Well, that's not fair. And I, in fact, could be the tiebreaker on that decision, right? And so that person didn't really get the appeal they were looking for if I make a ruling and then they don't like it. So that puts us, and that can put us into some trouble if we follow that process where I make a ruling, it's appealed, we don't appeal or take back what the ruling was made. Well, then that person has cause to come back onto the town and say, well, you have a flawed system here. What are you guys doing? So, Chief?
Just moving forward, just to explain this a little bit more, and the need for separating out the court clerk position. Realize that one, augmenting one affects the other. If we are adding to the police department, inevitably it's going to affect the workload of not only the judge, but the court clerk. You know, law enforcement's not a money-making entity. It's not. It's not designed to be that way, and it shouldn't be that way. I mean, it's not a punishment tax on the citizenry. It shouldn't be designed like that. But inevitably, within it, it's inherent that you're going to get revenue from being more proactive, you know, dealing with speeders going by your house. You know, I mean, there's been issues on Second Street that we've talked about before with students and so forth. You know, being more proactive, being out there, dealing with those issues. One of the tools that we have, obviously, is issuing citations for offenses, driving offenses, so on and so forth. With more officers filling those roles and working in that capacity, obviously there's going to be an influx. There's going to be more work to do for the court clerk. There's going to be more work to do for the judge. We'll be producing more work. There will be an increase in revenue just by the nature of what it is. So I think when you look at this, yeah, you're right. There's going to be a lot more work. And I think that we're going to be right back here again soon if we don't separate that out, just because it's going to be out of necessity, because the workload is going to increase that much more as we add to the police force. So,
Mr. Michelson.
I have a question for you, James. After our October 22nd meeting out back, you and I discussed where, in order to balance the budget, you agreed to take money for an extra cop out to balance the budget at the time. You told me that you would probably come back in April or May. Just keep me a heads up that you'd be coming back looking for another officer, money for another officer. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're at now, right? From what I'm hearing.
Basically, yeah.
Yes. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he put together a proposal which makes sense to facilitate this, to make this happen, make it a reality. So, again, I just think that, you know, now's the time to move forward. And planning for the future. And that's one thing I really appreciate hearing, because it hasn't always happened in the past with prior councils years back. I mean, we're kind of where we're at because we haven't planned for the future. And Stacey, you're absolutely right. We need to.
Yeah, and that's something that James and I talked about a couple weeks ago on, was how we want all these things right now, but we're not looking for, we need to take it step by step. And I think that's something that needs to happen. Yeah, the toys are always nice to have. We know that you have a fire truck that's coming up that maybe needs to be, you know, replaced in 3 years from now. But we're not really, we set a little aside, but we're not looking at the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we're getting ourselves in trouble with, when we do have these issues that come aboard of, you know, reconfiguring wages and reconfiguring all this, that when it is here, we've crunched the numbers, but we weren't really planning for it. I think we need to start looking more ahead, and instead of, you know, where we're at right now.
And we, any time that the staff and I get together and kind of look at any sort of planning or something such as this, we like to remove ourselves from the positions and say, okay, how would this look for the next person? You know, if we had to replace this position, how would that look? And we feel that the way this kind of lays out, it gives us a better idea of how to market these positions. If we see changes, we know we have at least one impending retirement coming up in the organization, probably within the next year or year and a half. And so that kind of changes the way this looks a little bit. This helps, the financing of this is really between now and June 30th. Where, you know, once another officer is on board, we'll reevaluate the court clerk and make sure that 16 hours is appropriate for that position, or does it need to be modified up or down? You know, if a retirement comes up, we may reorganize a few duties depending on the skill set, again, of who we bring in and who we currently have in the organization. It all depends on the system, and keep in mind, the growth we've seen in this organization and in our community over just even the past 4 or 5 years has changed so much that we haven't changed in-house. You know, we've created a position here and have created a position there. We haven't really dynamically evaluated how those positions interact.
We just need to evolve, I think. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I just think that we're at that point. I mean, we're going to experience growing pains, but we've got to evolve within our subset here, our subculture, if you will, and change things as it makes sense. You know, because really that's what it's all about. I mean, if this proposal, if you look at it, and it makes sense to you, well, then we should move forward in the best interest of the town. I mean, if there's issues that don't make sense with it or weren't explained appropriately, by all means, ask so that they can get clarified. You know, I think we're just, like I said, we're at that point. We need to get some momentum going. We need to get move forward with this thing. And, you know, I would love to see us get, especially in the police department, by 2021, where we've needed to be for quite a few years. And several of us have talked about this, you know, one-on-one. Us being literally bottom of the barrel in the state of Montana for manpower versus our population. That's just not acceptable. We're not, and it really comes down to an issue of response time. You know, had I not been available that night that I discussed the assault that was in progress, nobody would have gone to the call. Nobody. There wasn't anybody. I mean, maybe they could have called somebody out from someplace, but how long would that have taken them to get there? We can't do that to our people. We need to be responsible. We need to be responsive. This is forward momentum. This is a step in that direction. And it's time. We need to start taking these steps, being proactive, looking at how to resolve these issues. You know, it's just one of those things that, I mean, this has nothing to do with personalities or, you know, interdepartmental conflicts. We're always going to have those. There's going to be issues. I mean, this is a consolidated effort to really deal with this problem and take care of the people that we need to take care of. So,
Mr. Michelson.
The only thing I see missing on all this is more manpower for George.
Do you have a desire for more manpower?
Right now, we're okay. We definitely got to have people in sometime.
Right, and this keeps those seasonal folks in place, and we, in fact, expanded the months they work. I think in previous years, they worked 4 months through the summer, and we've expanded that to where they work almost 6 months for us. They start as soon as April 1st, correct?
Yeah.
So we've started that earlier, so because last year we kind of got behind. We also had a little bit of problem keeping the employee in the position, so which was out of our control. So this year we'll start those two seasonal people much earlier to help give him the help throughout the summer, and then he'll go 6 months until, you know, nearly the end of September, October, and this accounts for that with the savings that we saw last summer. So he'll have his summertime manpower.
So you're the one that's retiring in a couple of years?
No. We expect Denise, the deputy clerk. Yeah, she's mentioned it and hinted at it, and so we should be prepared.
The reason I asked is somebody to fill in to mentor, but if you got 10 years to go, then...
10 of them, hey? And that's something we've worked on throughout the organization is making sure that we have some redundancy and some cross-training, and so George has done a good job of making sure that duties throughout the Public Works Department are somewhat delegated so that everybody has kind of their specialty and they all understand the global picture in that department. So, 10 more? We're holding you to it. Okay? How would council like to proceed?
Well, we already discussed before we even made a motion.
Well, that's okay. You can discuss at length before you make a motion. Hopefully now you know what motion to make after the discussion. Ms. Holcomb.
I move that we consent to the mayor's employee reorganization plan.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. It's been moved by Ms. Holcomb and seconded by Ms. Barker to consent to the mayor's employee reorganization plan.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ms. Holcomb. I was on autopilot there.
Phillips.
You usually second. Oh, gosh. Moved by Ms. Holcomb and seconded by Mr. Phillips. Gosh. That we consent to the mayor's employee reorganization plan. You guys just have this routine going in the beginning of the meeting. I got used to. Any further discussion from the council? Public comment. Oh, my goodness. Ms. Howe.
Penny Howe from Altman. I have one question. It's great that you have a lady that has all this experience, but what if she gets hit by a car?
We hope
she does. Are you going to change your job description every time you have to change an employee? No.
We hope not to.
Well, I'm just saying, but you may not find another clerk that can do the planning and zoning and all that stuff.
We'd advertise it as such first, and if it didn't
well,
come to fruition,
I'm just saying by you're debasing it all on current skill sets, and it could change very rapidly. Secondly, when I interviewed for the judge, I was told I was going to have to do my own clerking. Thirdly, I know a JP in a county JP that does his own clerking. So you could possibly rearrange some of that to back to where it was. Like I say, he's a justice of peace for Petroleum County. He does it all. Sure. So,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Further public comment? Chief Motley.
So, I like the plan. I think it's long overdue. But I have one question, one concern. And it says right here in the proposal that the first phase of the plan realigns the job responsibilities. However, it does not take into consideration wage compensations for the changes. And that will be addressed in the next budget cycle.
Correct.
So what's the sustainability of this new realignment really going to be? We don't know. So right here, we don't know what that is. So what are we setting ourselves up for come budget time?
So in evaluating where we stand financially now, we understand that there may need to be a shift in compensation for some of the employees because we're transferring some supervision. We have some employees who are giving supervision to that aren't making the same, you know, the subordinate is making more than the supervisor is in that case. And so we recognize that will probably be, with the town clerk specifically, that will probably be the most significant change that we see. However, we're relying on building funds to help compensate some of that, which are fee-based, and we can sustain the fees. In fact, the building fund has an ample balance that if we don't start spending down, the state's just going to come in and ask for a check. So we do need to start spending the building fund balance down. And we typically take into account when we look at projections of employees and what's going on, especially this time of year, we're going to kind of put a buffer into place as to what is the percentage increase that we anticipate. And so what we always do when we start a new budget is we always, across the board, we give 2 to 3% plus a COLA per employee, and then we'll work our way back from that. So that's a worst case scenario. Given the savings we've seen through this reorganization, what we hope to do is take some of that money that's left over and roll it into the new fiscal year to help offset the difference. The biggest piece of that will be a police officer. You know, right now we're funding it, you know, basically 3 months out of the year, whereas next year we'll be expected to fund that a full year. So we're confident that this is a sustainable plan through budgeting, and April can probably speak to that in more depth if you'd like. But it's not something that we proposed and then said, well, we'll see how it works till June 30th and then revert. We don't want to see anything like that or switch and swap, that sort of thing. For the public, oh, Mr. Motley. Yeah.
I appreciate your comments and explaining how you're going to put that together.
Sure. Yeah, and sometimes that's not always demonstrated in the paperwork where we'll add that, you know, that buffer to say, okay, well, we know this is some wiggle room here. We always, April and I, and April especially, she's really good at playing worst case scenario out when it comes to money. And that's obvious in just her in her projections when she talks to reserve, and we sit down and go, okay, April, what kind of reserve should we anticipate this year? And she'll go, 50%. Well, that's the maximum. We're not allowed to hold more than that. And sometimes that's not always realistic or something we can do, so we scale it back a little bit. So, but she's been able to live with the 30% that we've got now. So, and that's positive. So we always project worst case scenarios for folks. Further public comment? Okay, hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Mr. Phillip. Oh, excuse me.
One more question.
Sure.
Just for James. Mm-hmm. Off the record. Hey, James, I know Stacy asked you a couple times. Would there be any way I could get a full inventory list from you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we actually did that not that long ago, so.
I can revamp from 2018 and pull it up all together.
Sure. Sure. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. That's all.
All right, I'll call for the vote. Mr. Phillips.
Aye.
Ms. Holcomb.
Aye.
Mr. Michelson.
Aye.
And Ms. Barker.
No.
Okay, motion passes 3-1. Next item is item E, discussion decision to consent to the mayor's appointment of Don Lorenzen to the Town of Stevensville Airport Board. Mr. Lorenzen serves on the airport board currently. His time has come for renewal, and he's expressed interest in serving on that board again. Ms. Holcomb.
I move that we consent to the mayor's appointment of Don Lorenzen to the Town of Stevensville Airport Board.
Is there a second? Ms. Barker.
I second the motion.
Okay, it's been moved by Ms. Holcomb and seconded by Ms. Barker. To consent to the mayor's appointment of Don Lorenzen to the Town of Stevensville Airport Board. Further conversation from council. It should be noted that Mr. Lorenzen serves as a volunteer at the airport as well, and he recently obtained certification to service our AWAS navigation system at the airport, which will save the airport $800 or $900 a year. So. He's also a valuable volunteer to have on our organization as well. So we appreciate his efforts to do that for us. If there's nothing else, I'll call for public comment. Okay. Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Ms. Holcomb.
Aye.
Mr. Michelson.
Aye.
Ms. Barker.
Aye.
And Mr. Phillips.
Aye.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Item F is a discussion decision to appoint council member to serve on the airport board in accordance with Stevensville Municipal Code Section 3-33. I'm going to have the clerk present this item.
So this item is really to... Every year, we appoint a council member to serve on various different boards. This is the airport board. When our council member Ray Smith resigned, we appointed council member Michelson to serve on the airport board. This is just the opportunity for council. We have a new council now with Mr. Phillips on board. This is the opportunity for the council to reaffirm either Mr. Michelson on the board or appoint somebody else to serve in that capacity.
Thanks. Ms. Holcomb.
I move that we affirm Council Member Michelson to serve on the Town of Stevensville Airport Board.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Phillips. So it's been moved by Ms. Holcomb and seconded by Mr. Phillips to affirm Council Member Bob Michelson to serve on the Town of Stevensville Airport Board. Further discussion from council. Public comment. Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Ms. Barker?
Aye.
Mr. Michelson?
Abstain.
Ms. Holcomb?
Aye.
And Mr. Phillips?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes. Next item is discussion decision to appoint a council member to serve on the TIFID and TED Board in accordance with Stevensville Municipal Code 2-330. Ms. Tribbency.
Thank you again, Mayor Councilmember. This again provides you with the opportunity to appoint someone to the TIFTED Board. This is your opportunity. It is not a mayor-appointed position. It's the council's opportunity to appoint someone to serve on that board.
Ms. Barker.
I make a motion to appoint council member Robin Holcomb to serve on the TIF and TID board in accordance with the Stevensville Municipal Code 2-3.300. Is that where we're at? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is there a second? Mr. Michelson.
I second that.
Okay, it's been moved by Ms. Barker and seconded by Mr. Michelson to appoint Councilmember Robin Holcomb to serve on the TIF and TED board in accordance with Stevensville Municipal Code 2-330. Discussion from Council. Public comment. Okay. Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Mr. Phillips?
Aye.
Ms. Barker?
Aye.
Ms. Holcomb?
Should I abstain?
And Mr. Michelson?
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes. Thank you. Next item is item H, discussion decision regarding council's appointment of a council member to serve on the park board. So the other boards that we have are all established by ordinance. The park board is not, which is something that we're looking to correct in the new year. Nonetheless, it's a board. And so the way the resolution is written is that the mayor makes an appointment of a council member to represent the council on that board. What I'm seeking from the council is basically, I'm just going to turn the appointment over to you folks and you decide who amongst yourselves wants to serve on that board. It's an annual appointment.
I'm already on a board.
and you're up for renewal.
Pay that time.
Yeah. Mr. Michelson.
I make a motion that we have Council Member Barker be on the park board.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Michelson and seconded by Mr. Phillips to appoint Councilmember Holcomb to serve on the Town Stevens Park Board.
No,
I'm sorry, Ms. Barker.
Almost.
We're going to get name tags for ourselves.
I almost scored on that.
Sorry, you almost got out of it. I was thinking Holcomb because she was on the park board at one time. Okay, so Mr. Michelson moved and Mr. Phillips seconded to appoint Councilmember Barker to serve on the Town of Stevensville Park Board. Discussion? Any take backs? We could put them both on there. All right, any public comment? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Ms. Holcomb?
Aye.
Mr. Phillips?
Aye.
Mr. Michelson?
Aye.
And Ms. Barker?
Stay.
Motion passes. Next item is item 10I, discussion decision to consent to the mayor's appointment of Loey Knapp to serve on the park board. Ms. Knapp was appointed to an expired term of another individual, so she's up a little more quickly than a typical full term on the park board would be. She's expressed interest in continuing to serve on the park board. So. Is there a motion? Ms. Barker.
I make a motion for the consent the mayor's appointment of Loey Knapp to the Stevensville Park Board.
Is there a second? Mr. Michelson.
Second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to consent to the mayor's appointment of Loey Knapp to the Stevensville Park Board. Any discussion? Ms. Barker.
I know in the past Loey has been upset with the fact that the park board is just a board that reports back to the mayor. There's no real discussions or decision making. Is she still going to be happy with this position? Because I know at one time she had made comment that she was going to resign from it because there's no real clarity on this board.
I can't speak to that. My indication or I don't want to speak for Ms. Knapp, but I hope that maybe she's optimistic that we can provide some better direction to the park board as to what their role is and how they interact with council and the executive staff. And I think some of that maybe will be delineated in the revision of an ordinance that actually establishes the park board versus a resolution.
I guess my other, problem too is, we had no real direction. We haven't met since July of last year, other than the one meeting that we held with the public and everything else, we really don't have a lot of active members on that board. We have Whitney McBeth, Renee Endicott, who are very busy, and you know it's hard for them to get here. Is it feasible to have them on that park board as well? I know that's something for a further discussion, but I think we do need to have the guidelines, and I think that's where Loewy was very upset that there is no real, we have a resolution, but that resolution is not very, it's vague, it's very vague, so.
Yeah. And the administration concurs that it is vague, and that we'd like to put some more energy into the park board and to helping them be more functional. There is room for additional people on the park board. I mean, you're already, I think you're two people short currently, so there's no harm in reappointing Ms. Knapp. She's able-bodied and willing, obviously. I mean, she's expressed the interest to stay on the board, and so, you know, I think you should consider her appointment and or the consent of her appointment, and then we can move forward with each of the boards, because I think there's some confusion on a lot of the boards as to where they, what their work plans should look like, and what's their outlook. Further council discussion. Public comment. Ms. Molly. Please. The camera can't hear you over there.
Vicki Motley, 318 9th Street, Park Board member. I think it would help to have guidance from the council and better things for us to live by. I think that would also help encourage more people to get onto the park board, because right now it is very frustrating to just spin our wheels.
Sure.
So I think direction from the council would be in their best interest. So, and I think Loewy is interested. I think she makes it, you know, she's a good member, but I have the same frustration, is that we don't have any direction. So I think as a park board member, we would like direction from the council as to where and how we should proceed.
Okay. Thank you. Any further public comment? All right, hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Phillips?
Aye.
Councilmember Barker?
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb?
No.
And Councilmember Michelson?
Aye.
Motion passes. On to 10K, the discussion decision regarding lease agreement between the Town of Stevensville Fire Department and the Stevensville Rural Fire District.
You skipped
10J,
Council President. Oh, sorry. HIJ, sorry, I was on this one. Okay, I'll get this. Discussion decision to nominate and elect a council president for 2019. As it outlines in your council communication, the clerk and I decided best to err on the side of caution and give the whole council an opportunity to nominate and elect a council president for 2019. And so we put this agenda item together for you folks so the whole council could participate in that decision as to who serves as council president. Procedurally, there's a motion to nominate listed there for you, and then once input's received on that, we can move to elect. So the nomination comes first. Ms. Holcomb.
I move to nominate Council Member Michelson to serve as the council's 2019 council president.
Is there a second to the nomination?
I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved by Ms. Holcomb and seconded by Mr. Phillips to nominate Councilmember Bob Michelson to serve as Council's 2019 Council President. Discussion on the nomination. Public comment on the nomination. Oh, Mr. Michelson.
Does the Council President get a pay raise?
No, unfortunately not. Totally up to the council, though.
Dang.
All right. If there's no public comment on the nomination, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Phillips.
Aye.
Councilmember Barker.
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb.
Aye.
Councilmember Michelson.
That's staying.
Okay. Motion passes. Are there any other nominations? Okay, hearing none, I'll ask or seek a motion to elect Councilmember Bob Michelson to serve as the council 2019 council president. Ms. Holcomb.
I move that we elect Bob Michelson to serve as the council's 2019 council president.
Is there a second? Ms. Barker?
Second that motion.
It's been moved by Ms. Holcomb and seconded by Ms. Barker to elect Councilmember Bob Michelson to serve as council's 2019 council president. Discussion from council. Public comment. All right, hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Barker?
Aye.
Councilmember Phillips?
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb?
Aye.
Councilmember Michelson?
Abstain.
Motion passes. Now let's move on to 10K, JJK. Discussion decision regarding the lease agreement between the Town of Stevensville Fire Department and the Stevensville Rural Fire District. Just like with the interlocal agreement, new documents have come to fruition on this topic. This is simply an update that the lease agreement that the town put together is in your council packet. However, we've since received a lease agreement from the Rural Fire District on the same matter. Again, the chief and I have not had a chance to go through that lease agreement and discuss it. So this is more of an informational item for you tonight. We'll reconsider this at a later date. Moving on. I want to make sure I don't. Yes.
I have a question.
Yep.
Do we forget to appoint someone to the planning and zoning board?
Nobody was due.
I was appointed.
Yeah. You're appointed as as the council representative.
Yeah.
Why did we not do that? We had a conversation.
I think it was the bylaws of the planning and zoning board and zoning board.
I think that the planning and zoning board, their, if I recall, their term coincides with their term on council.
Yes, that's what it was.
That's what it was. So he can be on that board as long as he's a council member. He serves on that capacity. So he's a shoo-in. Mr. Michelson.
I also serve on the board.
Yeah, he does.
So there could be. I called MMIA. They said it can be done, but it's not really, shouldn't really be done if you don't have the amount of people, because we have two council members sitting on the planning and zoning board, and that could act as a sort of favoritism when it comes to a vote, because we're both voting members.
So when Mr. Phillips was appointed to the council representative seat on the board, we failed to reappoint you to another seat. So as the roster stands now, you don't serve on the planning and zoning board. So we're okay. There's not two council members on the board.
I wasn't told I was off.
You've been told.
I've been told. That's good. You're good.
Consider yourself informed. I apologize. It didn't come up sooner. But since he took your seat was then vacated, right? We didn't reappoint you to another seat on the board. We failed to take that action. So that came to our attention when we reviewed the roster. When we appointed him to your seat on the board, on the planning and zoning board.
Who appointed?
The council.
No, we never.
No, yeah,
we did. Yeah, you did.
No, he was still to sit on that board and the airport board at the time.
Yeah.
So if you review past the minutes and the agendas, the council consented to the appointment of Jerry Phillips to the planning and zoning board as the council representative. So Mr. Phillips was appointed to the council representative seat on that board, and by doing so, you vacated or you removed Mr. Michelson from the board because his seat was refilled by Mr. Phillips. Mr. Phillips.
At that time, we had a discussion and with the Planning and Zoning Board, due to the number of people on the board, it was decided at that time when I was appointed that we keep Mr. Michelson on that board as well.
And we talked about that,
yeah,
but we didn't take the formal action to reappoint him to the board in another seat. Does that make sense? So there needed to be an agenda item and a motion appointing Bob Michelson to a seat on the Planning and Zoning Board, and that never happened. So as it stands to date, he's not on there.
Okay.
Mr. Michelson.
I think it would be wise, maybe two, because we're having a hard time even coming up with a quorum on our planning and zoning.
Yeah.
I mean, you know yourself, Megan hardly makes it.
And so that's a conversation we can have
right
down the road, not something that's on tonight's agenda.
Sorry.
That's okay. We derail sometimes. We bring it back. Item L, are we on L? Okay, discussion decision to approve a new land lease for lot number 1, block number 6 of the Stevensville Airport. Ms. Holcomb.
I move that we approve the new land lease for airport lot number 1, block number 6 at the Stevensville Airport.
Is there a second? Ms. Barker?
Second.
It's been moved by Ms. Holcomb and seconded by Ms. Barker to approve the new land lease for lot 1, block 6 of the Stevensville Airport. Discussion. Public comment. Okay. Hearing none, proceed to vote. Councilmember Michelson?
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb?
Aye.
Councilmember Barker?
Aye.
Councilmember Phillips?
Aye.
Thank you. Almost there. Discussion decision to consent to the mayor's appointment of Dustin Wood to the Town of Stevensville Airport Board. Like Mr. Lorenzen, he serves on the board currently and has expressed interest to continue serving. Ms. Holcomb?
I move that we consent to the mayor's appointment of Dustin Wood to the Town of Stevensville Airport Board.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved by Ms. Holcomb and seconded by Mr. Phillips to consent to the mayor's appointment of Dustin Wood to the Town of Stevensville Airport Board. Discussion from council. Public comment. Okay, hearing none, we'll call for the vote. Councilmember Barker?
Aye.
Councilmember Michelson?
Aye.
Councilmember Phillips?
Aye.
And Councilmember Holcomb?
Aye.
Motion passes. All right, moving into the executive report. I don't have a formal report prepared for you. Cameras continue to be something that we watch for, as we previously discussed. We've rescheduled this a number of times, and you can anticipate that I'll be communicating with more technology again tomorrow to find out if there's a new target date for complete installation. So. Just continues to kind of be delayed on their end. We've been very cooperative on ours. As far as I know, two cameras have been installed, plus the equipment down at the sewer plant. So we wait for that system to get up and running. There was another item I was going to remember, and I forgot it. George updated you that the well will be installed. That was the other item that brought to your attention. We've done a little bit of code compliance in regards to snow removal as kind of gentle reminders to folks that snow needs to be removed from residential properties in 24 hours and by 9 a.m. For commercial properties. Particularly our commercial properties, there's a few that have been challenged in meeting that requirement. So we've sent some communication out in a friendly way, and today those folks who still had not cleared their sidewalk in anticipation of the cold weather we're about to have, while it was melted, we did some door hangers and some note violation notices that aren't necessarily citations, but just a reminder that, hey, please take care of your sidewalk in a timely way. So, and it sounds like a few have already taken care of the issue, so we'll continue to kind of monitor that as snow falls. That's all I have for you. Council comments. Board reports. Do I hear a motion to adjourn? Ms. Holcomb.
I move to adjourn.
Is there a second? Ms. Barker.
Second.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Meeting's adjourned. Thanks very much.